across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, June the 12th, 2024. It's another beautiful day to have you here up north. Live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network. And if you're listening through the app, through social media, watching us on video, maybe listening later by podcast, nice to have you joining the show as well. I got a question for you. Now that Hunter Biden is a convicted felon, he shouldn't be on the ballot to run for president, right? Oh, wait, he was never on the ballot to run for president. Some other convicted felon on the other hand. Well, anyway, more perspective coming up on that topic a little later on. A reminder, as always, you can reach us here by calling or texting 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You can also use the Civic Media app, and you're going to want to keep that Civic Media app in mind because our Scotty Summer statewide text contest rolls on through the rest of this week. And so at 7:07, an hour from now, you can text today's keyword using the app for your chance to win a Wisconsin Dells prize pack, Brewers tickets, or a staycation grand prize. So keep that in mind an hour from now, right before we get the forecast from Brittany Merlot, where we've got a nice summer-like warm-up on the way. But we're going to have to get through some stormy weather to get there, perhaps this afternoon, perhaps again tonight. Brittany's got all the details coming up in just a little bit. We have, it being Wednesday, our climate check segment with Melissa Baldoff, and we have had a lot to say about the climate and energy benefits in something called the Inflation Reduction Act. But we thought we would maybe take a step back for a moment for folks going, you keep talking about this Inflation Reduction Act. What is it? And so we'll go back to its roots when it was known as, you know, the Build Back Better plan from the newly elected president, Joe Biden. And then it went through the congressional, you know, meat grinder. It's a lesson in perseverance and compromise, and also the potential to make a good thing even better in the future, rather than just taking your ball and going home. Looking at you, legislative Republicans, we'll talk about what you've been doing in the second hour, withholding money for children to improve their reading and literacy capabilities in Wisconsin because of the temper tantrum you're having over Governor Tony Evers having the right to use a line item veto. We will discuss how Republican legislators took a bipartisan plan to improve literacy in Wisconsin schools and have managed to turn it into yet another unfunded mandate. Todd Alba is on the road this week, taking his shows hither and yon. Today's hither would be Richland Center. Tomorrow's yon would be Eau Claire. Friday would be Amory. So we'll catch up with him in Richland Center and talk more about the road trip. Looking at the text line coming in now, and a couple of folks are telling us that there is some annoying beeping sounds coming over the feed there. Our apologies. We'll get somebody notified and get that worked on. Wait, I'm being told Greg needs to turn. Do you have a heart monitor on? Is that beeping coming from you?
No, it's not. I have no idea what's coming on. It's right now, people are hearing Bull Falls Radio and a beeping noise and something else, but we are working on it currently right now. I have let Luke Mathers know, and we apologize for the technical difficulties, but it is.
I just thought maybe you had a pacemaker or something.
How old do you think I am?
What do you think? You think young people like you don't have conditions? It could happen. It could be a thing.
I only have a condition. I need to know what my condition is in. That's what I need to know.
There you know. Okay. Do you ever get nice? Do you get letters at WAUK down there at the radio station? I'm betting not, but maybe you get a few. I don't know.
We got a letter from a really nice listener named Carmela. She lives in Milwaukee. She's a huge fan of Jane's show. Mm-hmm. And she wrote a really wonderful letter just kind of saying how much we mean to her and kind of telling us her favorite parts of the show and inviting us to her wedding. And that we weren't able to go. It was kind of a last minute invite, but I think it was She came by later, like a week or two later, and she's like, I just wanted to say, why not? Go for it. Invite them. And yeah, we don't get many, but the ones we do get are very, very nice.
How nice is that? Well, yeah. One of the best decisions we ever made at Up North News was to make sure that we opened up a P.O. box right here in beautiful Chippewa Falls.
Uh-huh.
Because we were noticing that when Courier Newsroom opened up their news outlets in all these other states, while the parent company was in Washington, D.C., I think at the time, you know, everybody's got their own little local outlet. And I'm like the old guy there for like the whole national network, basically. And it didn't occur to them until like the first newsletter started going out and people writing in going, oh, you're not a Wisconsin news outlet. Your address at the bottom of the newsletter says Washington, D.C. or whatever it was. Forgetting that when you sign up through one of these services like MailChimp or whatever to do, you know, emails, they require you to put an address at the bottom. Well, the company puts the company address. Well, that takes away any Wisconsin touch whatsoever. And I said, let me open a P.O. box down here at the post office.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
The best thing we ever did, because every so often when we do, you know, our equivalent of a pledge drive, and people will send something to P.O. Box 27 in Chippewa Falls, 54729. We get all kinds of, I'm holding this to the camera for Greg.
Oh.
We get all kinds of these sweet letters from people who say, you know, that they don't know how to use PayPal. They don't want to use, you know, a credit card. So they'll write out a check and they'll talk about how much I enjoy Up North News, writes Catherine. I love your broader state features, especially central northern areas of the state. The current political information is essential. Thank you. Well, thank you, Catherine, for writing. I've got a photo. I take a photo before I send all this, you know, to the home office. I take photos and I've got photos of all these nice notes. And one of these days I got to make a collage. But it's just a good reminder to all of us. The handwritten note is such a lost art.
It makes you feel good because you just know that someone sat down and took the time. Right. And what do we have not a lot of nowadays? Not a lot of time. Everyone's busy.
I know. It's amazing. We have all these things that are supposed to give us more time, make our lives easier, and we fill the vacuum with doing more things rather than making time to write the notes. Where's the one meme that I keep seeing is I want AI to wash the dishes and do the laundry so that I have more time to write rather than AI doing my writing. So I have more time to wash the dishes and do the laundry. And I'm like, yes, amen. That's exactly how this is supposed to work. You know,
I just want robots to take care of me.
I want robots to call balls and strikes.
I think last season I spent half that season griping about the pitch clock, and then I realized this was for good. Mm-hmm. This was for a good thing. And now this year, with all of the shenanigans with Angel Hernandez and some other umps who aren't great either, I'm like, put a robot behind home plate, leave umps at each first and third, and then good. We're good.
I'm not going to try to regurgitate it because I'll get the details wrong, but minor league baseball is using a variation of it. They've actually tried two different variations, much like they tried the pitch clock for a couple of years before bringing it up to the big leagues. So we're going to see it at some point. And thank you, Lynn and Oconomowoc, for telling us that the signal is nice and clean again. We appreciate that.
Oh, perfect. Thank you, Lynn.
So look, it's going to come, and I don't know who was behind the plate at the Brewers game last night, but that strike zone was just, I mean, and of course you can see where the ball is hitting. You can see the call is bad, and yet there was nothing you can do about it. Not that the Brewers were hitting things anyway, losing to Toronto 3-0 last night. Today's a day game. They're going to wrap up the series. Any chatter out there about, sometimes on day games, you hear people going, hey, you want to use a couple of the station tickets and go? Or anything? You didn't get solicited to go?
No, I didn't.
Skip out, did you?
If it was a Tuesday, I totally would, or a Thursday. But Wednesday, I got to be at the club tonight for the open mic. So it's like, I can't do that thing where it's like, I got to work later because I can't enjoy the game then. But,
yeah.
But no one offered me free tickets. Luke Mathers. Luke Mathers, the handsome and capable. I'll take some free tickets. Thank you, sir.
Get some work done. And now he's working, and now we're buttering him up. and then we'll figure it all out tomorrow how he feels about it, because he has to watch Top Chef tonight.
Is tonight the end?
Tonight is the penultimate episode.
Love that word.
It's a two-part. I know. Isn't it great? It's a two-part finale, I guess, always. And so, yeah, part one of the final, I don't know, chef off, whatever it is. Like, I don't know. I'm new to the show. So, yeah, we'll get part one. They're on a boat. You know, they left Wisconsin, and they revealed last week that for the final two-part, cook-off or whatever, they're going on a Caribbean cruise.
Oh, so they got tired of just going to Madison and Milwaukee and Madison and Milwaukee and Madison and Milwaukee.
Yep. Apparently, and this is all according to Luke, who has seen all 21 seasons of the show. But I guess at the end, they leave wherever they're going, and they take them on a vacation, which I guess is a nice thing, given that, you know, they've got them cooped up in a hotel for however long it is. And by the way, I don't know how long it is. How long did, you know, we see it across, what, 10 episodes or whatever it was, 12 episodes?
Yeah.
But I wonder how long it takes them to do all those.
I think it's like, I think the whole thing takes like 2 or 3 months.
Oh my goodness.
But also, that's not much of a vacation when you're stressing over whether or not you're going to win this contest. Or
right. Yes. Like,
that's not the definition of relaxation.
No. Although I would hope that after that, I mean, as long as you're here on the boat, you may as well kick back for a while. I mean, you know, some of you are losers, but you get to stay and drink on us. And you, the winner, you don't get to enjoy this. Because, you know, you're the winner, so we got to do a press tour.
Oh, not to mention, you can't talk about this at all.
And you can't talk about it. That's got to be just, terrible. Terrible.
That would be hard for you. If you won a contest and you can't talk about it for like 3 months.
Yeah, could not possibly pull that off. No way. 6 o'clock temperatures around the state look like this. Here in Chippewa Falls, it's 55. Hayward's at 45. Park Falls, 46. Wausau's at 50. Green Bay, 54 degrees right now. La Crosse, 62. Wisconsin Rapids, 50. Oshkosh, 59. Madison, 59. And Waukesha's at 57 degrees. Mentioned the Brewers losing to the Jays 3-0. Carlos Rodriguez became the 8th Brewers pitcher to make their major league debut this season. The 22-year-old also became the 12th different starting pitcher for the Brewers through 67 games. Rodriguez is now the 16th Nicaraguan-born player in Major League history and the first for the Brewers. In his debut, he worked 3 2/3 innings, giving up 2 runs on 7 hits while walking 1 and striking out 4. The finale against Toronto is at 1:10 this afternoon, off tomorrow, and then Cincinnati comes to town. We'll unpack the news coming up next, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Wednesday morning. When you're here, you're up north. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Today's history lesson coming up in just a bit. It was on this day in 1967 that the United States Supreme Court in Loving versus Virginia declared that all state laws prohibiting interracial marriage to be unconstitutional. And yet, you have Justice Clarence Thomas and others on the Supreme Court who are ready to throw that out and so many other protections for folks. And as an undercover journalist found out last week in taping some comments from Justice Alito, who wants to get our country back to a place of godliness, as he calls it, there's a challenge ahead of us for people that would like to protect their rights. But again, more about that coming up in just a little bit. Greg, you said you've got a couple of clips. Would that be the Alito clips that you are talking about over there?
Yeah, if you want, I could load those up for you.
Oh, okay.
And we can play those in a few moments.
Did not know that those were handy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I didn't mean to put you on the spot there. I just didn't.
Did you put me on the spot, or did I not put my? Did I not, sir, put myself on the spot?
You put yourself out there, and I appreciated that. So while you look for that as background, again, the journalist Lauren Windsor recorded Alito at the Supreme Court Historical Society's annual dinner last week and was talking about whether compromise between the left and the right is even possible. The journalist found that Alito agreed with her in talking about the U.S. needs to return to, quote, a place of godliness. And I imagine that's what you have over there, Greg.
Yes, I do.
All right.
As a Catholic and as someone who, like, really cherishes my faith, I don't know that we can negotiate with the left in the way that, like, needs to happen for the polarization to end. I think that it's a matter of, like, winning.
I think you're probably right. One side or the other. One side or the other is going to win. I don't know. I mean, there can be a way of living together peacefully, but it's difficult, you know, because there are differences on fundamental things that really can't be compromised.
All right, so that was actually the key quote. I'm so glad you had that one there. And as Matt from Germantown just texted in, our country was founded on a separation of church and state. That's correct, Matt. And so when Justice Alito says, you know, there are differences on fundamental things that really can't be compromised, the separation of church and state is one of those fundamental things. At least that where I would. And in another instance, the justice essentially blames the media for a lot of these ills. Let's hear about that and, you know, comments made about his wife and the whole flag controversy.
I think, like, public trust. And, like, how do we get back to that?
I wish I knew. I don't know. It's easy to blame the media, but I do blame them. Because they do nothing but criticize us. And so they have really eroded trust in the courts. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, ordinary people, ordinary isn't the right word. American citizens in general need to work on this to try to heal this polarization, because it's very dangerous.
I would argue that one of the ways not to have a polarized country is not to, I don't know, throw out people's fundamental rights that they've enjoyed for 49 plus years, as they had under Roe v. Wade, and to make noises that you would erode other rights, or maybe leak major Supreme Court decisions like the Dobbs decision, you know, before you repeal those rights. Those are some ways that you could restore trust. Another would be to recuse yourself from cases where you might have a financial interest. Or if you're Clarence Thomas, let's say your wife was encouraging an insurrection against the country. So no, we're not. There's a lot. Look, every Friday morning, Mark Jacob and I pick apart media coverage of, you know, some of the leading issues of the day. But media coverage of the Supreme Court isn't what's eroding trust in it. In fact, it's people like Lauren Windsor there and others who are not on the U.S. Supreme Court beat who are breaking these stories about essentially, you know, sanctioned bribery of justices and flying flags upside down at their residence. The people on the media beat for the U.S. Supreme Court, they didn't get those stories. Or they heard about them, like the Washington Post, and just kind of let it slide. So, no, it's not going to be the media in this case. And we can talk as well about the tactics that Lauren Windsor used, and we can talk about that with Mark Jacob as well on Friday. And whether, if you are going to an event and claiming to be something you're not, like Lauren Windsor in this case, talking about being a Catholic who wants to get us to a place of godliness, there are news organizations that would not and should not do that. You know, there are news organizations that should always let people know who they are when they're interviewing them, identify themselves, ask questions, knowing full well that now that that subject knows you're a journalist, they may tailor their answers accordingly. Undercover journalists, on the other hand, who will sometimes, you know, conceal their identity, In Lauren Windsor's case, she says the difference is that when she does that, and she's done this with several other political figures, it's always at a public event. You're not, you know, recording them privately in private conversations at private events. These are things that they're saying to people. They're just not saying them to people if they know there's a journalist around. So essentially, what you're getting is, you know, a leaked document, a leaked memo, a leaked email, you know, something that somebody else is recording. Remember Mitt Romney and 47% comment that he made when he was running for president? You know, that wasn't a journalist, if memory serves. It was somebody who was working at the hotel conference room where he said it and then leaked that to the media. All of this is to say, we can talk about the media leaking things, you know, 8 Ways to Sunday. We can talk about the tactics. But in the end, you would come back to somebody like Justice Alito and say, do you take any of this back? Or do you acknowledge that in a moment of candor, we now know where you are, that you don't think that, you know, right and left can come together, that there are fundamental things that really can't be compromised? Because if that's the case, we deserve to know what it is that you think can't be compromised. Is it the separation of church and state? Or is that you're willing to tell women what they can and cannot do with their own bodies? Because then that's going to help those women and their allies make decisions about who should be in the White House next year, appointing the next group of judges. All right, I was going to mention as well, but I'll save it for a little bit later, but in a somewhat related note, the Wisconsin Supreme Court yesterday suspended former President Trump's lawyer Jim Troupas from a state judicial ethics panel a week after he was charged with a felony for his role in the 2020 fake elector scheme. So we'll get into that a bit more through the course of the morning as well. But coming up next, we'll have our climate check with Melissa Baldoff. We'll go back to the early days of the Inflation Reduction Act and how we got to a point of having historic legislation that can help you save money on your energy bills and be good for the climate as well. You're up north. And we're back now at 6:34 on this Wednesday morning, Up North News Radio. Pat Kreitlow here, Melissa Baldoff over there for our weekly climate check report. This time a bit more about the political climate than the climate, but the two are very much intertwined, as you're going to find out in today's history lesson. Melissa Baldoff, good morning.
Good morning.
We realized we have talked so much about the Inflation Reduction Act from a climate standpoint in this segment, the energy efficiency credits and the rebates and the jobs that can be created. But we've also talked about the Inflation Reduction Act from a healthcare standpoint, Medicare being able to negotiate lower drug prices. We've talked about IRS enforcement. And it just seemed like this was a good time to go back to the beginning. And what is the Inflation Reduction Act that we've been talking about all of this time? And Melissa, let me start with the political premise, because we both have been involved in politics for a long time. Maybe the best way to explain what is the Inflation Reduction Act is that it's President Joe Biden's original Build Back Better plan, but after it went through the sausage grinder that is Congress. Is that a good way to give an overview of it?
Yeah, I do. I think that is a good way to think about it and to describe it. I'm excited about this little, you know, kind of living history lesson that we're doing. It's interesting to me because I just finished up a similar project at the end of the school year with my ninth grader who's going into 10th grade, had to do a project in social studies at the end of the year about the Affordable Care Act and how it came to be and what was in it and how it became law. So that's really interesting for me now to be thinking about this and how did the Inflation Reduction Act come into law? Because, you know, 10 years from now, that's going to be something that kids in school are studying, because we know that this is such a transformational piece of legislation that is going to have a generational impact. I'm excited to dig into this and talk about how this came to be and, you know, kind of what the history is.
Yeah, because A lot of this deals with President Biden's first 2 years in office when there was a Democratic House as well as a Democratic Senate. By the way, I add as a footnote, the Democratic House and Senate both had razor-thin majorities. And so compromises had to be made, looking at you, Joe Manchin, and others. But things did get done compared to the dysfunction that is the Republican-controlled House, which has the same kind of small margin, but they cannot agree amongst themselves. So President Biden came into office, and even going before that as a candidate, talked about an American Rescue Plan, which was going to help get the economy, you know, out of, you know, past COVID and through the crisis. There was this Build Back Better plan that became the Inflation Reduction Act. And there was this American Jobs Act, which we now know as the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law. So you had these three pieces, and then later others would come, like the CHIPS and Science Act and things like that. But Build Back Better became the Inflation Reduction Act and this multi-pronged approach. But at the time, Melissa, when Congress was debating everything that was going to be in Build Back Better, inflation was very high as the American economy was coming out of the pandemic recession. And it was a real concern, not just from Republicans, but frankly, a few Democrats that said, hey, this can't just be some big spending grab bag. There have to be things in here as well that could attack the deficit and that could lower costs for consumers, which would, you know, basically help reduce inflation. So there was that. It's much more than a wish list. There's a lot of practicality involved in this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think that when you look at this, you know, all together and you think about what President Biden's commitment is to the American people, that, you know, he really took this as an opportunity to focus on, yes, the physical infrastructure, but also what he's, you know, calling that human infrastructure. So to tackle climate change, but also to, you know, take on, you know, childcare and healthcare while doing things like broadband, EVs, you know, our physical infrastructure. People were scared, and President Biden was able to come in, and like you said, even with these, you know, just razor thin majority, just barely able to get some things done, but got these incredible, huge, important things done that are going to transform this country for years and years to come. So yeah, I think it's really amazing what he's been able to accomplish, and it's really, I think, representative of what why he ran for president and what his promise was to the American people was, I'm going to get things done for you because I know you're hurting and I know what you're telling me you need, and I'm going to be responsive to those needs.
Along with Build Back Better and the American Jobs Plan, which became the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, there was also talk of an American Families Plan, and that was going to be woven into Build Back Better as well. But this is where Joe Manchin and certainly every Republican gets involved when it came to, for example, paid family leave. That was one of the things that Joe Manchin helped kill. And so it didn't make the final bill that became the Inflation Reduction Act. And in fact, Manchin not only opposed the original legislation, saying that it was spending too much and could make inflation worse, he later backed out of a compromise bill that he had done, much like Republicans are doing right now on the bipartisan border bill. But at least at some point after a period of several weeks or even a couple of months, Manchin eventually came back to the negotiating table and said, okay, the president agreed to kind of slim down some of what he wanted to do on climate. But even then, we're still making historic investments that you and I have been talking about for months now that can get done. It's just that we had to get around a senator from West Virginia who is decidedly still in the pockets of coal, if not the oil companies as well. And yet, having worked that compromise through, you still have this landmark piece of legislation, Melissa.
Right. It does make it clear that there's more work to do, right? Because like you said, we haven't addressed our childcare crisis, and it's just absolutely bonkers to suggest to families that are struggling to deal with rising costs that offering some relief for childcare, which is very often the biggest bill that anyone has in their budget. I know when my kids were both in daycare, that was bigger than my rent. And one of the reasons why I could not afford to own a home at the time. So to suggest that that's something that's too expensive is just nuts. And, you know, to see, you know, also Manchin opposing in that original deal, you know, expansion of the, you know, child tax credit, you know, so those are the kinds of things that are actually going to help.
Right.
With those, help families that are experiencing struggles due to the high cost of inflation. But like you said, we do have this piece of legislation that will help people, that is already going to be helping people save money on their energy bills, help people save money as they make improvements to their home. It's going to help make our, you know, air and water cleaner. It's going to make us have a healthier, cleaner economy as we move forward. But it is a challenge to know, you know, kind of what we could have had and what's on the line and what we can still get, but we have to choose that future where those other options are still going to be available to us and still be priorities for the people we have in elected leadership.
Right. People still chose to get something done. They weren't going to get everything that they wanted. Same with the Affordable Care Act. When that passed, we said, well, we could have done so much more if Joe Lieberman hadn't killed the, you know, the public option and things like that. So you've got room to build on a record of achievement. We clearly know that there are things that didn't make it into the final version of the Inflation Reduction Act that we can come back to. But having said that, this thing still passed. It passed in the House with every Democrat voting in favor, every Republican voting against. It passed the Senate 51-50 because Vice President Kamala Harris broke the tie, and it was all done. And Melissa, I'm just going to read off some of the provisions, and then you can pick any one or two of them that you want to talk about, because along with all the climate provisions that we've discussed, it continued expansion of Affordable Care Act subsidies. It made changes to Medicare Part D, made insulin affordable for Medicare recipients. Here's one about the IRS: by hiring up to 87,000 new employees, you improved customer service and you made it easier to crack down on billionaire tax cheats. There's a new 1% tax on stock buybacks, which I still can't believe are a thing. They weren't a thing until Ronald Reagan allowed companies to basically, you know, replace dividends with ways to make their executives richer. And then you had a minimum corporate tax rate with companies that had more than $1 billion of income. They were no longer going to get away with so many loopholes that they basically paid no taxes. Among all those things, yeah, there's things, Melissa, that didn't get passed, but that's not a bad list for achievement in you know, one landmark bill.
Oh, absolutely not. And I think, you know, one of the ones that I hear the most from people and, you know, see so much conversation about and know what an impact it has is capping the cost of insulin at $35 a month. That is really, quite frankly, life-changing for a lot of people, to know that, you know, that is critical medication, that is life-saving medication. And, you know, we've all heard horror stories over the years of people having to ration their insulin, people having to go without, people having to choose between whether they're going to pay for their insulin or they're going to buy groceries. And by capping that cost at an amount that is a lot more affordable, that is really, really going to help people, you know, manage their budget, be able to, you know, be in charge of their health care without breaking the bank. And also knowing that there is a cap on out-of-pocket drug costs at $2,000 for people on Medicare. You know, this is really something that has a huge impact for a lot of people, and is a really good step, another step in getting healthcare costs under control, because as much progress as we've made on healthcare costs are still very out of reach and you know, can be devastating for a lot of folks. So anything we can do to be getting healthcare more affordable is going to be critically important.
And so in conclusion, you take this big picture total bill, you break it down into these various components, which include $370 billion to, you know, fight a changing climate. Take that down to what we talked about last week, $9 billion nationwide to go to home efficiencies, including $150 million coming to Wisconsin homeowners in two different programs that Kevin Kane outlined for us last week. An article on that is coming to our website shortly over at upnorthnewswi.com. And so I want to take last week's discussion on individual help right to the homeowner and say, how did we get here again? And so, Melissa, thanks for indulging me, taking a few minutes to kind of give that oral history of how Build Back Better became the Inflation Reduction Act and became these things that bring credits and efficiencies right to the home level, and that there's more work to be done. This all sounds to me like something Joe Biden can run on.
It sure does. And I hope that people, you know, really, like we always talk about, continue to learn more about this. We're going to continue talking about this as much as possible, because those credits are out there. The rebates are out there. This is money that is available to people. We want everyone to take advantage of it. These are real savings for people in Wisconsin, around the country. And, you know, they've got to take advantage of that. So hopefully we can continue to spread the word. We're going to keep talking about this, and hopefully we see more and more of these investments come into Wisconsin.
Real savings and real jobs and real impact on the climate. And that's your climate check for this week. Melissa Baldoff, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, we are about 15 minutes away from your next chance to win in the Scani Summer Statewide Text to Win Contest. You're going to need the Civic Media app for that. Get it downloaded if you haven't already. Today's history lesson is coming up next. You're up north. Jazz keyboardist Chick Corea was born this day in 1941, passed away 3 years ago. Plenty of hits in his own right, but I always enjoy playing my favorite tune from him off the Happy Anniversary Charlie Brown soundtrack, The Great Pumpkin Waltz. Melissa Kay is here from locally grown radio, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids. Melissa, how are you?
Good morning. I'm great. I thought that sounded, isn't that Vince Guaraldi?
It's Vince Guaraldi's tune. Okay. As played by Chick Corea, yes.
Gotcha.
So just really, really enjoy this.
Welcome does to not have to Jazz be, Hour.
Does not have to be a great pumpkin time of year to enjoy that.
Never. Too. Can always be.
Yep. Yep. Melissa, when we talked to you a couple of weeks back, you said that there was going to be this big announcement. Then we talked to you like the week after that, and you said, I can't tell you yet. And the week after that, you said, I can't tell you yet. Melissa, can you tell us the big announcement already?
We are doing
well. We got to go to commercial, folks. Sorry about that, I guess.
You're so great, Greg. We are doing some programming changing on WFHR. We are going to have local shows from 4 to 6. And so we're going to have Playmakers 3 days a week instead of just one. And that will be from on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And then I get my own show.
What? Mm-hmm.
Nice.
That is so cool. What are we calling it?
It's going to be called Community Stories with Melissa Kay.
Aww. Love it.
After you guys made fun of my other name, I had to pick something else.
What was the other name?
What other name?
I'm not telling you.
Well, oh, okay. Way to take your ball and go home.
No, it was community tease because it was on like the tees, the Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Nope.
But yeah, vocally it didn't work.
Yeah. I don't remember mocking it, but yeah, I think you went in the right direction.
Yeah.
So good on you.
So it'll be stories talking with our you know, elders with history and our young people with their innovations in the area. I'm excited to get started.
Oh, that's cool. Do we know when we're getting going on this, or is it still a work in progress?
It's still a work in progress right now. But probably within the program change will happen soon. Mm-hmm. And then my show will launch probably sometime in July.
Will you remember us little people? Will you still come back on Wednesdays and talk to us?
Of course I will.
Oh, good.
Okay. I would miss you both so much.
Aww, we would miss you too.
Stop it.
He said, pivoting back to regularly scheduled programming here. Birthdays today include singer Robin, who is 45 and had this classic 90s hit. We have a couple of basketball-related birthdays. Drew Holiday is 34 today, and he is not on a golf course with other Milwaukee Bucks players. He is still in the playoffs. He's in the NBA Finals and has a chance to wear a ring with the Boston Celtics, so good on him. And Marv Albert is 83 years old today, and I believe still calling the games.
Yeah, I believe so too, yeah.
I will occasionally, you know, you occasionally see some classic video come up of Michael Jordan, yes! And I can't believe he's still active and still calling the games. But you know what? If Bob Uecker's calling games as well as he is at 90, and he is, he's sounding great, then Marv, you go for it. That's outstanding. Okay. Jennifer Lopez had the number one song this day in 1999. Which means it's been since 1999 that I really paid any significant attention to Jennifer Lopez. She's been on TV here and there, and now she's on TMZ pretty much every night because, you know, will they or won't they get divorced, her and Ben Affleck? I don't... If that's your life, you know, just showing up for the gossip shows on where you show up on the red carpet or are you getting divorced or not... That can't be the happiest life, you know? That's the price you pay for mega celebrity, Melissa, maybe? I don't know.
I guess so, but no thanks.
I mean, you're an award-winning radio person, Melissa. What's it like up there? I mean, you're just being hounding by
the air is thin, Greg. It's thin.
Yeah. You know, the Wisconsin Rapids paparazzi is relentless sometimes.
Why do you think I'm wearing this hat? I can't go out in public.
Can't be recognized. No, can't let that happen. The Supremes had the number one song this day in 1965. So Diana Ross singing Back in My Arms Again, and Jennifer Lopez singing If You Had My Love, and Robin singing Show Me Love just leads us to that reminder that this is Loving Day in the United States. The U.S. Supreme Court decision in 1965, Loving versus Virginia, that declared all state laws prohibiting interracial marriage to be unconstitutional. On this day in 1981, the very first Indiana Jones film franchise, the original Raiders of the Lost Ark, was released in theaters. The question back then was, this is a big summer blockbuster movie. Did people then see Harrison Ford as taking on this brand new character? Or for a while, were they still adjusting and going, why is Han Solo running away from this big rolling boulder, you know?
And not in space.
Yeah, and not in outer space. Now, the consensus, I'm sure, was at the time, this guy's good. He can do this franchise. Now, this turned into a franchise. He did several other films, you know, dramatic films mostly. You know, I think of Air Force One, which was yet to come, and so many more. But I don't know who would have predicted back then how many sequels and everything else that would have come from one little film that was released this day in 1981.
Mm-hmm.
Soundtrack of my childhood.
Is it really?
Yeah. I sang that song in my head every time I'm running through the woods.
That's awesome.
For me, and for me, it's also a reminder, John Williams. I mean, talk about a career that spans, you know.
He just retired and he's like 92.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He's like, okay, I got no more songs left in me. Yeah. You know what? It was a pretty deep well while you had it. I mentioned that this is National Loving Day for Mildred and Richard Loving and their case before the Supreme Court. Child Labor Awareness Day, which we try to be mindful of Melissa's hours, being the youngin' that she is. This is National Jerky Day. So if you know any jerks in your life,
hey, you know, jerky!
Hand them a meat snack and wish them a happy day. Peanut Butter Cookie Day.
Those are good.
Really, Greg, we're going to do this after you trash German chocolate cake?
Peanut butter cookies are good.
Oh, my gosh. Now I see where you went wrong. So I put up a whole TikTok about German chocolate cake yesterday just for you.
With the pecan coconut frosting?
All right, well, we're done here. All right.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Melissa Kay, so glad to hear the big announcement.
Good luck. Congratulations.
The show prep.
So thank you. Thank you.
Nice to see you. We'll talk to you next week.
You too, guys.
All right. And in the second hour of Up North News Radio, we will talk about bipartisan programs to improve literacy in Wisconsin, or at least it was bipartisan until Republicans.